Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, here we are. It's another episode, and it's one of those ones where we're recording on a Friday. It's the afternoon. It's a bit warm. But you know what, Joe and Matt? I'm feeling loose.
Oh, are God. You?
Yeah.
Lads letting feeling loose.
Anyone else feeling loose?
I am now. You've just loosened me. Paradoxically loosened.
Triggered the looseness. I think it's mainly because if you're in the UK, you will have known. I think actually a lot of the world at the moment, the last week, has been very hot, and today, Friday, it's just cooled down a bit, and we can let loose.
You're feeling cool.
Well, I'm saying I don't need my fan on 24/7 anymore, which is a good feeling. Because God, are my eyes dry?
What?
Don't your eyes get dry when you have your fan?
They do. It's just that you said it in like I don't know. It sounded like you were turned on.
Really?
God, my eyes dry.
You let's just move on.
You sound like the exact opposite of Mike Skinner.
Emotive. Right. Yeah. Let's. Speaking of emotive, why don't we go on to Motive, who are making the Dead Space remake. That got announced last night. We'll have a little talk about EA Play. What else we got come out today? We talk a bit about Zelda, a bit about Death's Door, which is a bit like Zelda. And we kind of half promised it right at the end of the show after feedback. There'll be a big spoiler warning. We're gonna have a little mini deep dive on the end of Loki and what it means for the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But as I said, let's kick off with some Dead Space. What are you guys big Dead Space fans?
I never was, but I don't know. It's not because I didn't like it. It's just it was one of those things that sort of appeared and passed me by as a series. Mm-hmm. I think I missed the first one. And then when you miss the first one, you're like, I'm not going to go back and play all the games just so I can play Dead Space 3.
It's just like me with Mass Effect.
It's never been... It's been something I've admired from afar, apart from the eye scene that I see all the time. That people love to say is good to look at.
It's horrible. I saw a GIF of it last night and I just scrolled on through Twitter. I'm not looking at that.
I don't want to see it in next gen.
I don't like eye stuff. Matt, you strike me as someone who likes Dead Space.
Yeah, bought it at launch. I can remember going in to game. I was at university and buying at launch Dead Space, Fable 2, and I think Fallout 3 all came out on the same day. Wow. I remember trading in a good pile of games and begging for a student discount to get all of that. but yeah, I really like Dead Space. Like, I think the series generally kind of like gradually takes a step down with each iteration. I think Dead Space is the best one. But I think in general, the series is really, really good. It comes from an era of EA that I have a lot of fondness for. I think there's a lot of kind of like people don't like EA kind of like in its modern iteration. And I know they still obviously drop some great games. Like, obviously, I'm a big fan of sort of Respawn stuff. But I think my favorite era for EA was that kind of period when I was at uni, because that's the Mass Effect era. It's some great Dragon Age games are coming out at that point. And Dead Space is one of those kind of games that I've got a real good fond memory for.
Lovely. And so what they're doing is it's not any sort of remaster. It's a full-on remake, sort of Final Fantasy VII style in the new engine. See, Motive know what they're doing historically, I would say. I think you can put a lot of faith in that. I'm not worried about this as a remake. Do you guys... I didn't really get a gauge. Like, I think it's pretty split 50-50. A lot of people are over the moon with this, and a lot of people are like, oh, I wanted a new one. Do you think... Is it too... Like, is... When was Dead Space? 2008,
I think.
Eight? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that too soon for you for a full remake of something?
not if the the opposite reality is that Dead Space never exists again, which is what it was going to be. Like, this, I think the way you have to think about this, if you are upset that it's not a sequel, is that this is testing the water. Like, this is it worth us getting back into this? Because they cancelled it because it wasn't making them enough money. So this and Skate and other of these EA projects, like, say what you want about EA, they are at least trying some of the stuff that people have repeatedly asked for at this point, and it might well all go to shit. Like, who knows what will happen out of this? But I think in a world where the opposite, you were never going to get a sequel straight out of the gate, so let's be happy that they're trying something a little bit more risky and support it if it's good enough.
Well, I think in the past they have gone for the straight sequel thing. I know it's not the same amount of time, but Mirror's Edge 2, everyone's like, we want more Mirror's Edge, more Mirror's Edge. Well, came out, happened. No one bought it. It was a vocal minority, funnily enough. Like, I know Dead Space has a much bigger fan base and following.
It's
and
an easier
than Mirror's Edge.
It's an easier concept, right? Like, Mirror's Edge is, it's a game that's very much for me and people that are a bit like me, in the kind of like, we like weird kind of like slightly more experimental stuff, but within AAA
parkour
space.
Masters like you.
It's just
you
that
you love parkour.
Well, yeah, clearly I am the parkour man that's running around the IGN office and vaulting across to the press across the road.
I've seen it. You look like Bill Gates jumping over that chair.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's like, Mirror's Edge struggles because it's an experimental game within AAA space, right? So it costs a lot of money to make something that only a few people like, which is what I really like about it. Dead Space is a more realistic proposition, right? In that whilst it's horror, which is a little bit more niche, it is at least coming out in the era of streaming, where horror is very popular in the streaming kind of market. My hope is that, kind of like you said, Cardi, that it's a Final Fantasy VII style remake, where in my head it's actually closer to Resident Evil. But my hope is that you actually are right in the Final Fantasy VII big, in that, like, I don't think it's necessarily been long enough for it to just need a straight remake, as in, like, every corridor is exactly the same. It's just now got 4K textures. It's all, like, it's been remade for the ground up for a ray tracing Frostbite engine. I would like it to still surprise me. I don't want it to be exactly the same game. I just want it to be the same.
That is the clever thing they could do, is, like, people who know that game well, is, like, a quiet bit, just throw an extra jump scare in there that didn't exist before, or a bit where everyone knows the scare is coming, it's not actually there, and you just throw everyone off. You're like, well, I don't know what this is anymore.
That's what they did with Resi 2, right? And it was, and people fucking loved that, because it wasn't changing the fabric of what that game was, but it was messing with people's, it was kind of a meta thing where it's like, they know that people know what's coming, so change it a little bit, and it makes a big impact. I saw a good Reddit post about this, which was just a picture of a guy with a tiny domino, and every domino after it got twice as big until the last domino was massive. And the first tiny domino was Resident Evil sells better than expected, and the last one was Dead Space Remake. And it does feel a bit like we've got to that point where AAA horror can just be a bit more odd and still really pop off, and so I'm hopeful that those dominoes keep getting bigger until we get to
crushed by them.
El Shaddai, Ascension of the Metatron 2.
that's the dream. That's the ultimate dream. That is where this ends. The world's biggest domino is El Shaddai. Cool. Well, we don't know when it's come out. We obviously didn't see any gameplay. It's probably still a while away, and it's next gen only, which is exciting because we're getting more and more games now. Just like, we're just making this for next gen, which means, I know it's a shame if you don't have a next gen console, but by the time this is out, I imagine a lot more people will have them. So there we go. That's Dead Space. Not much more to say. Also, we saw Battlefield's Portal mode announced, which is kind of a love letter to old Battlefield. Really, I saw a lot of people who, I've always, like, dabbled in Battlefield. I'm not, like, a hardcore Battlefield player. I wouldn't know all the maps off by heart or anything, but I've seen a lot of people online who I follow who, like, are big, like, Battlefield fans or Battlefield YouTubers, and they're like, this is what we want, this is amazing. Like, if you don't know what Battlefield Portal is, it has 6 classic maps, over 40 weapons from old, I think it's 6 old games, or 7 old games even, and 40 vehicles from, like, 3 different theatres of war. So you've got, is it World War II, current day and modern, is that right?
There'll be, like, it'll cover kind of like the modern era, and then it'll cover like the 2042 kind of era, won't it, as well as the World War II stuff.
So that, like, if you didn't see the trailer, it's quite a funny trailer. Not only do they have a song by Idols in it, which is always a plus, but they had, like, you know, Nazis, like, shooting down modern jets and stuff. It was just mad to look at. It was a mad trailer. And that's kind of what I think, I don't know, maybe I'm speaking for everyone. What I want from Battlefield is just large-scale madness going on like that. I know you're excited for this, Matt.
Yeah, so Battlefield 2042... I'm not actually that excited for, as in like the traditional kind mm-hmm. of game that they're doing. And I watched the, because I didn't actually watch EA play live, so I watched the trailers to prep in for this podcast. And the opening kind of bit of that was a little bit like, I don't know quite how this is going to get balanced. Like, I think it's a fun idea. But mm-hmm. then they showed Arica Harbor, which is a map that I have an incredible amount of fondness for. That is from Battlefield Bad Company 2. And that era of Battlefield is, I think a lot of people share the sentiment, but is Battlefield at its peak? And to mm-hmm. see a modern day version of Arica Harbor and modern day versions of the guns from that, and seeing like the medic from Bad Company 2 rendered in modern day graphics, was very much a case of, okay, this is kind of like, I know it's not a full remake of Bad Company 2, but it's got enough of Bad Company 2 mm-hmm. that the whole point of Portal is that it's essentially, I guess it's custom game modes made by sort of, so it's almost semi-modding for a console mm-hmm. game, and obviously it'll be on PC as well. But it means you can do that. Like, the game mode that they demonstrate is the idea of the infection style modes that people used to make, where it's just a bunch of people with knives versus a bunch of people with knives. But for Battlefield, they did a bunch of German soldiers with combat knives versus a bunch of modern-day medics with defibrillators. So it's got that kind of absolute bonkersness about it. But you can already tell from what they've said is in it. There's just going to be people that set up classic-style Bad Company 2 servers where they're just running modes that are, I get to do Arica, and I get to do it with the classic Russian versus American kind of team setups with all of those weapons. Or they've got, I think it's Caspian Border is the name of the map, which is a map from Battlefield 3, which has got this massive kind of tower in the middle that you used to be able to collapse. And that mm-hmm. is in some of the gameplay trailers. Being able to play those in a modern Frostbite engine with ray tracing and all of the kind of things that the modern version of Battlefield supports. Absolutely, give it to me.
This is one of those creator modes where I see it and I'm like, I will never meaningfully engage with a single piece of this, but someone out there will make something absolutely incredible that the developers never thought of, and I will have tons of fun with it. Like, it's kind of what I wanted Overwatch's... Mm-hmm. Is it Warehouse that... What was it called?
Oh,
Warehouse called? Toolbox?
Workshop.
Workshop. Warehouse. it was kind of what I wanted that to be, but that always felt a little bit granular. Like, it felt a bit hard to kind of get a sense of what those things were. Mm. So I'm hoping Battlefield, it's a bit more of a, like, a madness generator as opposed to a tinkering situation.
I hope it's kind of
from
like...
what I've read, like, the parameters you can change are insanely granular. Like, mm-hmm. you can make it so one team can't go prone and shit. Like, it's really weird.
My hope is it's also just a bit more accessible, because I find that Overwatch's workshop is a bit like it's hidden in the weeds a little bit. Whereas I hope actually having this kind of big marketing push for it, it will be like a big main thing on the main menu when you go in. Do you want to play classic 2042 as it is? Or do you want to play this side of it? Like, if it's set up that way, I think it's got a real chance for a long life.
I just think, like, building in what amount to, like, soft modding tools to a game is just a great idea at this point. Like, you know, if we're looking at a world where games need to last for 5 years instead of 1 year, I think that's the best way you can do it, is, like, let people make their own shit. Don't make them wait for your stuff, because you're never going to be able to, you know, account for how much you need to do. How much work you need to do.
I love a little play of it at launch, whether it's, like we said, actually making any of my own stuff or just using what other people have done, which is far more likely. But yeah, I'm up for that. I'm getting more and more into Battlefield this year. I'm looking forward to playing it quite a bit, I think. So hopefully it lives up to expectations. We also had some new announcements, which included Grid Legends. Mm. I thought this EA play in general was all right. It wasn't the longest in the world. I thought half of the games kind of, I thought, looked really good, and then there was half of them, which, I mean, half of them we're not going to talk about, and then there was Grid Legends, which I just want to talk about, because it looks mad. Mainly because I think it looks like a game that even 10 years ago no one wanted. If you haven't watched the Grid Legends trailer, it's bad. It's just, when will we stop doing live action scenes in games, especially in racing games, where they've never worked, they're always cheesy, and the acting's not good? When will this stop?
Is this a plague? I was only aware of the 2015 Need for Speed that did this. Is there a plague of them?
The older Need for Speed had little live action bits as well. They weren't full on like live action scenes, but they've always, like, Need for Speed historically have had a bit of. I remember Underground having an Underground 2. I think the original Most Wanted might have had a bit of it as well. But
I remember Need for Speed The Run, I think it was, which was the story based one where you were on a cross country kind of relay race. That didn't have live action, but it had quite bad Quantic Dream style bits in between the races, which, yeah, that was, I can do without that.
Can you think of a good racing game for story? Write in IGN underscore UK for me if you can. If you can suggest one good car game that has a good campaign or story.
Are we forgetting that Dirt 5 had Nolan North and Troy Baker?
Did you play it?
No, and I don't. I'd never heard a single thing about what it was.
Yeah. To be fair, they're not really story modes. The Forza Horizon campaigns are fun enough to play through, and you're hearing it all over the radio.
If you actually pay attention to the story, it makes your brain
fall out. The
story's
not good.
It's fucking rubbish.
Like, do we need campaigns in car games?
Yeah. I mean, well, but that's the thing. The Forza Horizon one, I wish they would just drop any pretense that you're at an event or doing anything and just make it, like, stupid. Like, my favourite Forza Horizon thing they've ever done for story was that fucking Fast and Furious crossover where... Was it them?
I don't remember this.
Or was it Need for Speed? One of them had a crossover, Fast and Furious.
But Need for Speed did a film that was just a Fast and Furious knockoff, didn't they?
Yeah, with Aaron Paul
in it. There was a Fast and Furious, like, racing game crossover.
It was just called Fast and Furious. Yeah, it was came out a couple of years. Well, last year even, wasn't it? And it was meant to be absolutely appalling.
No, that's the actual game rather than a crossover.
That's the actual Fast and Furious
Forza Horizon 2 presents Fast and Furious. That's what it was. It was an actual thing. But my favourite bit of that was, obviously, Fast and Furious, part of that is like you go and steal a car and then you drive it away, and that's part of the fun. In this, like, they had Ludacris just being like, we gotta get this car, but we can't steal it, we gotta race it. And that was like the entire story. It was brilliant. And I, like, that's what I want. I want idiots telling me that I've just gotta do races for all reasons. It's like, if you wanna eat tonight, we got a race for it, baby.
But yeah, I don't know. Simpsons Hit and Run? That is mainly a driving game, as a decent story. Yeah, I don't know. You do a lot of driving. I just don't. Like, enough with the live action scenes in games that aren't predominantly like FMV games. If the whole game's FMV, I can get behind it to an extent, although I think a large majority of FMV games are bad. But yeah, I don't know.
So one's not a fan of Command and Conquer then?
I mean, you don't want to lose Tim Curry's showing space.
Yeah, that's true. But I can deal with it, like, in old, like, I don't know, it made sense in some ways, like Myst used to have them, and Zork and games like that. But I feel like back then I'll let them off because it was easier to put a video file in than render whole CGI cutscenes. But yeah, I don't know. I don't. Grid Legends, like, if you haven't watched the trailer, I don't know. It has the what's the name of the actor from Sex Education? He's got like a nice little tash in this, and he's trying to act a bit hard, and it's not really working for me.
Let me just. I've got the story open. Nukti Gatawa, I think it is, or Gatwa. Wait.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not. It's not doing a lot for me. But yeah, if you could. Honestly, IGN underscore UK feedback, convince me, is there a racing game, and it has to be a racing game, not, I'm not counting GTA as a car game with a good story, a racing game that has a good story, because I want to know it. The last thing I'm talk about from EA Play is Lost in Random, which is out in September, which I wasn't expecting so soon. That's a nice little treat. This looks very good. If you haven't watched the trailer for Lost in Random, I would do that, because it's, What's the pitch for it? It's kind of like a Coraline game, but with some really cool kind of Final Fantasy VII Remake combat.
Well, Yeah, I mean, yeah, I suppose you're getting
if you really
want
to
yeah.
boil it down, if you really want to.
It's got that Leica art style, which I adore. I think it's got a real great aesthetic. But yeah, like I'll let you explain the combat, Carly, but it looks really special.
So when the original trailer came out for this, maybe a year or two ago, I can't remember when they first debuted it. I was into it. Art style was doing a lot for me. I just don't remember what the gameplay was. But then I saw
someone
a lot of gameplay
didn't
in this trailer.
My interview feature with the creators
well,
of
I
the
probably,
game in 2020 that explained
I probably
the combat
did
in exact
a year
detail.
And a half ago. I just haven't read it in the last year.
Everyone today coming on being like, oh, look at the tactical combat. I told you about that a year ago and you didn't fucking
okay,
read
well,
it.
I didn't see with my own eyes the dice rolling and the cards, and that's what got me into it because From my memory, which obviously forgot your stunning preview,
I reread it.
Head it was just like a third person action game with like melee combat basically. But little did I know it has this little dice you walk around with. Maybe Joe can explain in further detail in a minute instead of shaking his head. but it's if you collect cards, and I like collecting cards in games, but then you have your little dice companion who you roll, and then am I saying this right? Whatever number you roll on the dice is the amount of moves you can do with the cards, essentially, that do different attacks.
Yeah,
there we go. Cool. So it's kind of got a little bit of Slay the Spire-ness to it, and that's what I like about it.
I really like the idea that they're tackling the idea of RNG complaints by the fact that you're still ultimately playing that game and it's still ultimately skill-based in how you approach it. But you're just given that little bit of random flavor to play along with as well, and kind of desperately going like, "Fuck, I want a six," and then you don't get it or whatever. I bet there's like some wild bullshit cards that you can get that cost the full amount, and it's you're just sitting there constantly hoping you roll it. Like that kind of thing really appeals to me. Like that mixing of board gamey stuff with a bit more of a regular video game combat. I just think it looks really fun. Like and such a departure from that studio's other stuff. I'm sorry if you can hear the shouting outside my room. There's a child who comes out every day and makes the same noise, and it's driving me fucking mad.
Are they related to the guy who stood on your wall eating pasta?
No, actually. This is... Oh, no, that's actually a tool. That's a power tool that sounds exactly the same as the child I hate.
I don't think there's never been a child. It's always been a power tool.
Oh, I've stuck my head out the window and looked at that kid screaming and just wanted to go, fucking kill you. But then, as we've discussed before, he works for the... He doesn't work for... He lives in the Chinese that I like around the corner.
Works for the Chinese. So there's a screaming toddler who works for the Chinese.
The problem
called
is...
Called power tool.
All I'm saying is if that child was to go missing, they might have to shut down the Chinese, and that would have a worse effect on me, because I love the Chinese, than if I have to listen to the child scream. It's hard living where I do, because I'm...
It sounds really tough.
Tormented.
But yeah, Lost in Random looks very good. Yeah, I'm into it. I think, as we kind of Matt mentioned before, I think EA get a hard time, and sometimes rightfully get a hard time for what they do with their games, but then they do have this side to games where Lost in Random like looks really good. Their originals in general are pretty good. Like It Takes Two is still my game of the year, I think, and that's an EA game. Mm-hmm. You've got like the Unraveled games, they're both enjoyable. Like EA originals are good games.
They are.
People should... I don't know what I was going to do. There you go. That's enough EA talk. It's getting warm again now. I've had my windows closed for 20 minutes. And I've lost all flow. Talking of EA games, I thought I'd do a little bit of a Mass Effect update, because it's been a long time since I started Mass Effect now, and few people, I'm sure, want to know what's going on in my universe.
Do you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, many people have asked, Matt, many people.
Get an
I'm
inbox
sure you'd want to know as well.
I had a look at where your trophies were, so I know exactly where you are on it.
So you'd rather look at my trophy list than talk to me these
exactly.
days. Isn't that our relationship? Mm-hmm.
It's just
mental.
Matt is a man of fact. He only needs to know progression statistics. He doesn't need to know your opinions.
I tell him what I do in Mass Effect, and he checks the trophy to see if I'm lying. It's like, well, he actually says you never did this loyalty mission.
Oh, that would be so good if he caught you out doing that. That would be brilliant.
The truth is, though, I'm only three trophies away from the Mass Effect 2 Platinum, which I might go back and do, because they're all just ones like incinerate 25 people, which I don't think would take very long.
Super easy.
Yeah, I could
do
that.
Go and do that. There we go. Today. You do it for me.
I mean,
yeah,
in real life.
My spit.
Anyway,
okay. We can't be talking about what we're doing, incinerating people in real life. We can't be talking about that. I just finished Mass Effect 2 two or three days ago now, and I absolutely loved it. Yeah, one of the better games I've ever played, I think. And I'm only, like, I think 3 hours into Mass Effect 3, and I'm already thinking this might even be better. Which I know a lot of Mass Effect 3 for people comes down to the ending, so I'll see what I think when it's all said and done.
They're loonies.
But,
yeah.
But I'm really enjoying it so far, because the step up from Mass Effect 1 to 2 was pretty evident in almost everything for me, including the combat. But then I fired a gun in Mass Effect 3 and I was like Mass Effect 2's combat is good, it's serviceable. Mass Effect 3's combat, the guns feel really good. I wasn't expecting them to feel that good.
There's a lot more of them as well. Like, you'll find loads of guns.
It's a proper action game by that point. Like, the way the biotics and tech stuff work in mm-hmm. tandem as well. Like, it all comes... I don't know how much of this is, like, one foot following the other, and I don't know which foot followed first, but the multiplayer mode, which obviously isn't in the remasters, like, the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer was genuinely fucking amazing, and the combat felt so good as part of that. And I've always wondered, and I'm sure it's out there and I just haven't looked hard enough, which it was, whether it was like, we have to have a multiplayer mode so the combat has to be better, or whether it's, we've got combat so good that it would be a waste not to do multiplayer. But that was just mm-hmm. such a fun thing to do. But yeah,
I'm not going to do any story spoilers, because I'm sure a lot of people like me might be playing through them for the first time, and I don't want to do that. But I can do some more, like, I can do some, like, relationship updates and stuff, because that's not there's story spoilers there. I can reveal I got everyone through Mass Effect 2. No one died, which I don't know if I got lucky. I don't know if it's quite logical, the choices you make to do that. But I did look up after I did it to see what could have happened and who could have died when and where. And I was a split second away from making a decision that would have got Tali killed, and I wouldn't have wanted that, because I like Tali. So, yeah, that would have been a shame. I kind of like all the cast. I don't think there's anyone I would have been... Maybe if, like, Zaid or Kasumi, so you don't really... I know they're DLC characters, you don't really get to know them too much, but I've met Kasumi at the start of Mass Effect 3, and she's got a cool bit, so if I'd missed out on that, I would have been annoyed. So, there's stuff like that. I will say, this is something that actually our good friend Lucy James has been quite annoyed at me by. Had quite a long WhatsApp conversation with me, and she sent several all-caps messages to me. Basically, through Mass Effect 1 and 2, I was in a relationship with Liara.
Well, you weren't in 2.
Well, we kind of were. We kind of, you know, I did meet up with her because I did the Shadow Broker stuff. So, and I did meet up with her, and we had a nice night together in Mass Effect 2. And Mass Effect 3 started, and she came up to me and was like, you know, where's this going? What's happening here? Like, do we want to carry on this, or should we just be friends? And I had a long think, and I thought, do you know what? For a while now, I don't feel like I've been your priority, Liara. You've been off. You're more happy doing other things. You don't really seem to be making too much of an effort.
Married
when
to
I
the
turn
information
up to you.
Now.
Exactly. Like, I turn up and now you're interested. You didn't come looking for me. I had to go and find you. And I'm not going to lie to you. There's a new person on board the ship by the name of Samantha who has turned my head.
Oh, my God.
And
you're having an affair with a secretary.
I'm not having an affair, Matt, because first chance I could, I told Liara I think we should be friends. So I have not cheated at all. How dare you?
Also, I say secretary. She's not, specialist trainers higher than. Although I always think that, like, Kelly seems to be, like, a much more, like, higher ranking officer within the same situation.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But Samantha, she made a good first impression, and I'm looking for possibilities there. So that's my current status in Mass Effect.
Right.
Liara, I'm sorry. I think we're better off being...
what a chilling way of talking about romance.
Well, on the Normandy, it's what you have to do.
You standing in the corner of a nightclub with a gin and tonic, looking for possibilities.
You know that the least... believable thing about that is the gin and tonic, because I hate gin and tonic.
Well, so. It looks like the most possibility-filled drink.
But yeah, that's what I'm feeling. I'm feeling Samantha Trainor, maybe where my eyes take me next in Mass Effect 3. So, who knows? I don't know what other possibilities are going to turn up. But there, that's where we are. Who are you romancing? Because you've just started three, haven't you, Matt?
Yeah, yeah. It's always Garrus. If I'm playing
Garrus,
playing female Shep, mm-hmm. go for Garrus. Obviously, Garrus is not romanceable in the first one, so had a fling with Liara for the sake of getting the Paramore trophy. But
wow, so you'll just cheat on people to get trophies.
I mean,
this is disgusting.
I'm going along with what the game will allow me.
You're standing in the corner of the nightclub with a gin and tonic, asking people, "Will you help me get a bronze trophy?"
Perslow's chucking moves in the middle of the nightclub, like going wild, taking all comers.
Got a big T-shirt that just says, "Talk to me if you want a bronze trophy."
It's very much the the Gen Z free hugs sign.
But yeah, I always saw Garrus as he's like my right hand man. He's who I put all my trust in as team leader and stuff.
Turn
like
on
that.
What
like,
you
he's
want
my
in a
lieutenant.
Partner.
I want to keep that purely. I want to keep that purely on a business. Like you are, like we are in this fight together. I don't want any feelings to get in the way of that.
I see.
But yeah, there we go.
Purely business.
But yeah, I'm enjoying Mass Effect a lot, which is predictable because, you know, very good, isn't it?
Because it's fast.
Yeah, should we talk about more old games that have been remastered? Skyward Sword,
a
HD.
A more divisive one, to be sure.
Definitely more divisive. I haven't played either the original or the new one yet. I haven't bought it. I've just got too much work and too many games to play, so why spend £60 on a game I'm not going to play anytime soon? But you've both been playing it quite a bit, haven't you?
I've played it a lot.
I've played it a small amount.
Yeah. I think Matt and I feel differently about this
we
this
feel
remaster.
Differently about a single thing. I think I'm more on side on the other stuff.
Yeah, that's good. I never finished Skyward Sword when it came out because I didn't get a Wii for a few years after it came out, and then I kind of came to it late. And then there was just, it's that feeling of like, have you ever had that where you buy a console late and you get a big stack of games that everyone tells you are good and you just never finish mm-hmm. any of them? I did that. And it wasn't for disliking it. I wasn't a huge fan of the motion controls, but I felt like I knew what they were trying to do and it kind of worked for me. I just absolutely love this game now. I'm like 25 hours in. I think I'm getting towards the end. I've just enjoyed every minute of it. I think it's just I think the trouble people had when it came out. I saw this I think it was a guy called Ross Fubister, who I think is a very good Twitter follow if you like games. What are you looking confused about, Cardi?
I just was someone shouting outside your house just
then. No, it's the tool. It's the power tool.
Is that the tool? That sounded like someone shouting.
I know it does. So basically, I've forgotten what I said because the power tool. The power tool came along and ruined it.
You were just saying that you're absolutely loving it now and you didn't originally.
Yeah. Basically, I don't know what more to say, but I think Ross Fubister, that's who I was talking about. Good Twitter follow at 87th. He runs the Cool Box Art Twitter feed as well. He's very good. He pointed out that he thinks more people are going to like Skyward Sword now because they're not going into it with the idea that this is like what Zelda is now or this is the future of Zelda. It's just a one-off experiment. And with that in mind, I genuinely think a lot more people will get into it because they've still got Breath of the Wild, but this is just like a dungeon from beginning to end. There is no, like, really the overworld barely matters, and even that's full of puzzles. And all it is just, like, classic Zelda, get tools, use tools in interesting ways to do interesting stuff and fight bosses over and over again for 30 hours. And I'm finding it so satisfying to just kind of rinse through in that way. Where, I'm not sure Matt's thoughts on that, but I will quickly get onto the motion controls, which I have not used at all. I've used button controls. And I found them mostly satisfying, but I know that Matt has not found them as good.
Mm-hmm. So I really like the game. I've never played Skyward Sword before. This is my first introduction to it. Like last week, Emma was saying that kind of like it's great for her, and I have the same thing that we just get a new Zelda game this year. Mm. And I sort of think it doesn't feel like it's aged massively in terms of kind of the stuff that I'm doing. Like I find really satisfying. It's got a good. I've only done the first temple, as in like the first proper temple. Not there's like a tutorial one that you do very close to the start, but then you go down to Hyrule, and I've done the first temple where you get a good bit of equipment. There's a lot of really fun little walking back and forth between different rooms and getting things to do different things, filling up with water. It's got all of that kind of good Zelda stuff, and I really like the art style. I think that's got a great feel to it, like that watercolor stuff. So I like all of that side of it, and I will be definitely playing through it. At the moment, I've gone back to Mass Effect 3 just because, obviously, I am a huge Mass Effect nut. But once I finish that, I'll be coming back to it. The reason why I'm probably not pursuing with it immediately is I find the button layout, it feels very much like it's obviously from a controller that had one analog stick and required you to waggle a stick to do a lot of stuff. And the way they've kind of like, I can see why they've reformatted it as it is, so that what you have is the right analog stick. You move up and down to swing your sword up and down and left and right and then in diagonals. But what that means is because you've got that attached to that stick, to actually look around, you have to hold the shoulder button. And I, maybe because I'm just a bit cack-handed, find it very difficult to do very quick movements between that. So if you're fighting a character and you do need to do a little bit of movement, I find it a little bit more difficult to actually handle moving and swiping swords in quick succession. Yeah. And I also find that I've only played it in handheld mode, which is not the usual way I play my Switch, but I was away from my flat for a while, and that's where I was playing it. I find that the very small analog sticks on the handheld are not great for actually getting the motion of the sword swing very well, so I find that I'm quite often doing diagonals instead of across. Yeah, so that's why I've been frustrated.
I think that's totally fair. So I've used a Pro controller the whole time, which is obviously like a full-size controller, and I think the stick stuff is weird. So the moving the camera thing, when it first started, I was like, oh my god, this is going to destroy my entire time with this game. I kind of did get used to that as I went on. And now, by this point, I'm now genuinely worried that I'm going to go into another game and forget that you don't have to hold buttons to move the camera around. But the other part of it is I know some people have been taken aback by the fact that, obviously if you hold right, Link holds his sword out to the right, and then you slash it left to slash left. And so I think some people have been like, oh, that's a weirdly cumbersome way to deal with that. The thing is, and maybe this is harder on the Joy-Cons, I haven't used them properly, but on a full-size stick, you can just flick it, and then he does it without any pre-motion to do that. And there's only a couple of fights where it really relies on you lining up a shot first. So that kind of thing has kind of faded to the background. The thing on the movement, which I find interesting, because I think that, and I had the same problem, I think that comes down to how you expect to be playing an action game as opposed to how you are forced to play Skyward Sword, because almost the entire time you're given one person to look at and duel. And so it wants you to just hold the lock on and just walk around them and side strafe and kind of get behind them and break their guard. And it that was another thing where I was just like, oh, that took me 10 hours to really get used to. The point where I'm, 25 hours in? I've only just started using my shield because I was like, oh, this is a fucking nightmare.
To be quite honest, I haven't even figured out, you push in, don't you, on the stick to bring the shield up. But kind of the actual intricacies of shield combat, it's not really quite explained to me yet. And I'm just assuming, I know it's got a long education curve, hasn't it, to that game?
It never tells you any more about using the shield. It literally comes down to when you click it in, that's a parry, and it only wants you to parry. Right. It does not want you soaking up hits. It wants you to be parrying every single hit with a shield, because that's why they've got degradation.
Yeah.
The idea is that if you're soaking up things, you are punished heavily for that, to the point where most shields break after five hits. I feel I totally get why that stuff bugs people, and I think your point about the small sticks is very very fair. But I will say, the longer you go on with it, the less it becomes an active thought, as opposed to maybe something just occasionally rears its head.
I'm absolutely willing to give it the time, because I think the game design is kind of I love what Breath of the Wild is, and I think Breath of the Wild has set out a really good new future for Zelda. But there is something about that, and I think because I'm so into FromSoft's games as well, there's a certain element of Dark Souls that does draw from that same school walking around these kind of very elaborate kind of dungeons. And obviously there's less puzzle solving in Dark Souls, but I really like the fact that instead of super difficult bosses, I've got like these big kind of brain teasers in that each room kind of links to another room in the way that you think about it. And I love, like, in that first one, there's a lot of bits where to get through gates, you've got eyes and you have to make the eye dizzy. And I like that each time it starts introducing other elements to the door. And it's like, well, now you've got two eyes. How are you going to make both of them dizzy at the same time? And it just sort of gradually escalates. And I think that's a really nice way of putting together the dungeons.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing with Skyward Sword, like, Skyward Sword must have come out after the first Dark Souls, right?
Or the same year, I think.
They might be the same year.
I was at GameSpot doing an internship when Skyrim, Dark Souls, and Skyward Sword were all sort of around the same time.
Good time.
Yeah.
So was that 2008, 2009?
2011 was, yeah. Skyward 11? Sword.
Mm-hmm. Jesus.
Like, yeah, real late. 2011. Yeah.
I think the thing you really notice, lots of people had a problem with how Skyward Sword makes you backtrack, which again, I kind of get, but actually going back to it, it really feels natural that you'd go to those places and build them out. Like, that's,
I also love backtracking. Like, I think it's a great thing.
That's Zelda dungeon making writ large. Like, it's going, not just the dungeon unfolds as you're inside it, but open world, or, you know, hub world areas open up as you go through them. And then your overworld does the same thing in Skyloft. Like, everything is slowly unfolded for you, and that feels super Dark Souls-y in a lot of places, like unlocking shortcuts and building up new ways to get to new areas from the same areas. It's like a lot of that stuff feels very like echoey of Dark Souls level design. It's very cool. I really love it. I think it's great.
I do really like Breath of the Wild, obviously, and I love it because it's of the systemic nature of it. Like, I love finding new things. I do hope that even if it's not Breath of the Wild sequel, but whatever comes after, is able to find like a nice middle ground between the two, to be able to have that beautiful open worldness with all of these systemic design. But I want those massive dungeons again, where like it's not just little shrines, like you're really delving into something deep and mystical that's got all of that design to it.
I'm still convincing myself that the flying bits of Breath of the Wild 2 are big dungeons, because they're naturally enclosed, so that feels to me very like a natural fit for how they would build that back into the structure of the open world game. Oh man, can't wait.
What if the twist is Breath of the Wild 2, it's actually Skyward Sword 2?
I'd have
it. That's the big reveal.
It really does look like they are combining those two things, and they're both the same director, and those are his only two mainline Zelda games he did. He did some of the spin-offs for Capcom. So I think like there's something in the idea that he'd be like, well, I made two of the most different Zelda games ever, so now I'll just go like, there you go, there's your 11 out of 10 game, enjoy yourselves.
Also would make sense why they'd release Skyward Sword, right? Like, there might be something in the marketing to get people used to some of these ideas.
That would make sense. Another game which has iterated on Zelda, and as you mentioned, Matt, probably from a lot of Dark Souls as well, is Death's Door, which is the hot new indie game, which, I don't know about you guys, for me it just kind of came out of nowhere. Like, the reviews came out, everyone was giving it 9s, 10s out of 10, like, this game is incredible. It wasn't until Joe told me it was from the developers of Titan Souls that I realised I maybe should have known about this game. Maybe I'd seen it in trailers before at a presentation, but I just hadn't been tracking this game at all.
I remember the previews just kind of released coming out, and I think did Reb do our preview for this, Joe? Like, I remember Reb talking a lot about Death's Door.
She definitely did some stuff after E3 on it, but I don't know whether she did a preview.
But that's when I started hearing about it and it seemed like it probably got something good, but then it wasn't until you'd started talking about it, kind of, it was like, okay, I should actually probably start looking at this when it comes out.
Yeah, it's on PC and Xbox if you haven't checked it out. Not on Game Pass, sadly, but I think it's only £15 to £20, so it's not a super expensive game. But yeah, it's got a lot of Zelda to it, and it's got a lot of Dark Souls to it. I know that almost half the games that are announced these days seem to be, here's our Souls-influenced games, but this one genuinely is. And I think the reason I'm liking it so much, I've only played about an hour, I should say, I'm not very far into it, but it's got the bits of Dark Souls games I do like, but in a more forgiving way. I like the kind of checkpointing, and it's not as difficult a game. And I know that's a dull thing to say about Souls games, as they're difficult, but they are challenging games, and this one isn't as challenging a game, at least so far. I don't know how difficult it gets, but you're smiling like it gets super difficult.
I'm like maybe 5 hours into it now. I wouldn't say, like, it's never as difficult as kind of like Souls games are. Mm-hmm. The checkpointing, I actually think, is very similar to Demon's Souls, where you get a checkpoint at the start, and mm-hmm. you probably won't get one until the boss. But what it does do is the level design is so snake-like that it means you're constantly unlocking shortcuts. So you're always, like, pretty much every little step of progress you make, you're knocking down a wall, or you're creating mm-hmm. a bridge, or it's got the one thing that I love that the Souls games do, that this is nixed basically wholesale, is pulling levers and getting a really satisfying clunk as, like, a gate drops open or a ladder drops down, and it does a lot of that, and genuinely some of the best level design that I've seen this year. Like, really fantastic, both kind of, like, in the way that they snake and kind of, like, fit together, but also in, like, the visual design of them. There's, like, really distinct differences between where you are, which for what is essentially a world that all completely links together and runs back on itself, you need that kind of aesthetic difference to understand where you are in relation to the other things. Mm-hmm. So when you do get that bit where you unlock a door or a gate and you come back in, you immediately go, oh, I'm back here. I know exactly how all of this runs together now. Mm-hmm.
I should say what the setting for this game is, if you haven't heard of it. It's kind of, I don't know a lot about the story yet, but it's almost like a Grim Fandango start to the game. Is you basically play a Reaper who happens to be a small crow. You have got to go find some souls, and you basically shortly into the game find out, oh, I've got to go to different corners of this world to defeat some big bosses to get enough souls to unlock another door. And that's as much as I know so far. I don't know if it's the first boss of the game or if it's a mini boss, like it's a big like walking castle thing.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's a boss.
There's three kind of big bosses that are the kind of keys to the game, mm-hmm. and then there are kind of like the smaller bosses, which I guess are your regular bosses throughout, of which the castle is one of them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like that. As you say, that Grim Fandango, it's like, it's a bureaucracy style kind of like afterlife agency, which is sort of like, feels like it's inspired by like the Death's Door sort of thing. Is very Monsters, Inc. in that, like, in your overall, like, it's equivalent to Firelink Shrine, like where you go when you come out of the overworld back to kind of like the Reaper world, is just full of doors that lead you to different areas of the world. And that's got a very sort of like, and those doors are powered by soul energy. And there's quite a lot of discussion like in the company. It's like, oh, well, we need to go out to reap souls so that we can open doors to reap more souls. And it's got that kind of like the inevitability of the scare system of Monsters, Inc., which I quite like.
Honestly, man, let's get rid of Souls likes. I want Monsters, Inc.'s likes to be the next big thing in gaming. Monster like, but, I'm so into that.
I think as well as the level design, I've come across a couple of little puzzles so far, which are fun. I'm in the second area of the game, it seems a bit more puzzly. Just the combat is just really tight. Yeah. Like it controls really well. So far, I've only got the sword and the bow and arrow that you start with, so I haven't picked up any new weapons, but I've heard there's some fun weapons you can get along the way.
And Zelda stuff ones as well. Like you get a hook shot and stuff like that.
Nice. It's just a very well-designed game. It's just... like, yeah, it's just very fun, and that's what I want. Like, and it's only what I've heard about 10 hours long, which is music to my ears as well. I don't need a super long game. I've got Mass Effect on the go, and that's my long game for now.
This is my post Zelda game, so I haven't touched it at all. But the one thing I do know about it is the signs. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the signs?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's good. Like, if you haven't seen it, you can chop signs in half like you can in old Zelda games. Except in this, if you try and then read them, the actual text box that would come up in a Zelda game is also chopped in half, and that's fucking brilliant. Good on them.
Yeah, I like it a lot. Matt, you've always played a lot more than me, and I assume it's still good at the point you're at. And...
It's like one of those. It's vying for my game of the year. Like, there's been a lot of good games of this kind of like scale, for lack of a better word, like this and Wildermyth and... Grifflands, all of these kind of things have been the things that have stood out for me. Like, I ultimately feel like for me this year has been the year of Mass Effect, because that's what's taken up so much of my time this year. Mm-hmm. But playing these in between that is like all of them quite different, all of them kind of taking cool ideas from other games and re-riffing them in its own way. Like, But yeah, as you say, the it feels so tightly designed, this, that it really does feel something special.
Yep. Yeah, play Death's Door if you get the chance. Like I said, it's not too expensive at the moment, so yeah. Worth taking a gamble on. Now, I don't even think it'd be that much of a gamble because it's just a good game. Do you know what else is a good game? Well, I'm assuming it's a good game. Joe designed it, so who knows where it's going to go. The Endless Search. Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search?
The fucking kid just joined in with the power tool. Like,
what?
Now it's double. Now I've got two of the same sound from two different sources. It's fucking
That
on.
Is just the perfect backdrop to an Endless Search.
I'm going
to
close
screaming
my window.
Child
I
and
feel
a power
like it's,
drill.
It's been going on too long now. I have to close it. I'm
okay.
Going to go insane.
This what? Is all staying in. This
yeah.
is all staying in.
It
yeah.
better be with... This is verisimilitude, motherfucker.
Oh, who do you think's going to win this Endless Search, Matt?
Probably you.
Nah, I think you will. Look at us being kind.
Huh?
Joe, what game are we playing?
We're playing that game you played last week where you'd name the thing with the highest Metacritic.
Simple.
Yeah.
I like it.
It's just a really fun game. I enjoyed listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was very good. So we'll do it again. It's games again. I've got five categories of games. Matt, do you understand the concept?
I do.
Just to make sure?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. If you don't at home, you'll get it very shortly. I'm going to name you categories. You're going to give me game names that would have the highest Metacritic in those categories. We are starting with what I think is... I don't know whether this is hard or not. Rockstar game.
Mm. Ooh. As in games made by Rockstar, not games with Rockstars in them.
Correct.
So I can't have a...
Brutal Legend.
Here, yeah. which one is going to be the highest?
That's the thing.
As if who's going first? Who?
Matt's on the left on my screen, so Matt will go first.
Okay, I've already got mine.
Bang okay, in. Go for it.
Okay, GTA San Andreas.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. I like it.
See, I've got a couple in mind.
I'm going to ask you to specify a format.
Oh.
PC or PS2?
PS2.
Cool.
So I've got two in my head. For me, if it's going to be their last two games, I've got Red Dead 2, but I can't remember if everyone... For me, maybe the best game I've played in the top three. And I know we gave it a 10, but I don't know how... I seem to remember at the time there were people who were a bit like,
I know several people who hate it.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know, I can't remember the reviews. I can't remember how many reviews didn't give it like a 9 or a 10. But for safety, I can't remember too many people not thinking that GTA 5 was a 10 or a 9. So I'm going to go GTA 5.
Okay.
And yeah. On the original on PS, we'll go PS3, whatever it is.
The PS3 version.
Yeah, the original release of it.
That's 4, sorry. I picked the wrong game. I'll tell you straight out of the gate that I wouldn't have expected this, but 4 is definitely more highly rated than both of these games, which is wild to me.
I really like 4. I've got kind of the urge to play 4. I want a remaster of 4.
Is it because you've been playing The Sopranos, so you've got that kind of want for
Maybe. But I really like 4. I
like 4, yeah.
I want it remastered so it just doesn't look as blurry and grey.
You need that PC mod.
I never played the expansions for 4.
Oh, they're so
good. Everyone says they're amazing. Maybe I should do that. Right, Matt. Mm-hmm. Grand Theft Auto San Andreas on PlayStation 2 has a Metascore of 95.
Ooh, that's high, that.
Grand Theft Auto 5 on PlayStation 3 has a Metascore of 97.
Oh,
Cardi comes
in.
When you said
PlayStation, I thought you might have fucked it, because I'm fairly sure the Xbox version ran better than the PlayStation
version. I
think version.
In this case...
it probably takes them both as the same, doesn't it?
I think PS3 and Xbox, they do have the same on here.
Right.
Whether that means anything, I don't know.
I suppose in the PS2 era, there were more single format games mags, weren't there? Like, you got at least two PlayStation mags and at least two Xbox mags.
Ooh, I'll take it.
He's done well.
That was one.
Big start.
Anyone could have done it.
Right. Next. We are going for a game in which you create a custom character.
Ooh.
And I'm talking appearance, not like loadouts.
Okay. Ooh, just hit my mic. It's fallen over. It's back up.
Where you create a custom character.
Something you would, you could see in the Monster Factory series.
I am going to go for... Let me think. I'm just trying to think of the best games of all time and how many of those you can create a character in. I'm going to do one here that I think may irritate Matt. And I'm going to say Divinity Original Sin 2.
I got that in mind, but you can take it. I've got another one.
Divinity Original
on
Sin
PC.
2.
Yeah, Divinity Original Sin 2 on PC.
Cool.
I'm assuming that... I don't know the launch history of that game. I'm assuming it launched in a good state.
It did, to my remembrance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've no worries there.
Matt.
I am going to go for... Dark Souls 3.
3?
On PlayStation 4.
On PlayStation 4. Another very high-scoring couple of games. Cardi. Divinity Original Sin 2 on PC. 93. Big time meta scores.
I thought it would be an early 90s. That's what I was banking
for. Matt, Dark Souls 3 on PS4. 89.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Cardi takes it.
Just
but
give
again, them. By scant numbers of points. Mm-hmm.
Just tell me what Bloodborne, because Bloodborne was the other one that I was thinking could have been the other one.
I have Bloodborne in mind.
Bloodborne.
But I think even we gave it like a 9 or something. We didn't.
92, so it would have been one away.
Yeah.
Okay. Cardi could take an early win. With a game that doesn't feature violence. I'm going to say primarily doesn't feature. You know, like, violence isn't its key concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Am I up first?
Yes.
Stardew Valley.
Stardew Valley is a big time. Does include quite a lot of killing slimes.
Can I ask a question? Would you say that Portal 2 contains any violence? Is that a puzzle game? You don't kill anything.
I think I'd accept Portal 2.
Is Matt okay with that?
Yeah, I think so. Like, you're not shooting them. Like, you're using puzzles to get rid of turrets.
There's no real violence.
Yeah. I mean, the turrets are trying to kill you, but...
You're not committing violence, though, are you, I suppose?
Not against humans.
Okay. Stardew, please specify a format.
Ooh, that's a good question. But I think I'll go for the original PC version.
PC. You picked correctly. Okay. Portal 2.
My backup, if you said Portal wasn't fine, was just going to be Animal Crossing. New Ross.
Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Stardew Valley on PC garnered an 89.
That's higher than I thought.
Won't be as much as Portal, though, will it?
Cardi. 95 for Portal 2 across all formats. So that is a big win for Cardi. But I've got two more categories, so I'm going to
go. It's been close. It's not
like,
you know.
It's been very close. Like, that was the biggest gap, and that was 6 Metascore points. Exactly. So
I could replay the Portal games. It's been a long time now. I don't think I could remember the solutions.
Oh, I definitely wouldn't. A game in which you eat food.
I mean, I think I could. Is it me first?
Yeah, this time around.
I'm sorry. Breath of the Wild.
Oh,
alright.
Red Dead Redemption 2.
Taking the risk, seeing if in this world.
I actually can't remember what's
going on. I'm pretty sure Breath of the Wild's like a 97. Or a 99 even.
It wasn't as high, because this came up in... Because Emma and Al voted it in, didn't they, on the last time?
I think, boys, if I remember rightly, it's a 97.
Boys, they're both 97. They're... I want two more games.
So Red Dead would have won the Rockstar one as well. How interesting. Okay, let me think for backup quickly then.
Two more food games.
Let me eat food. I'll go with The Witcher 3, Wild Hunt. You can eat food, can't you? I'm not going mad.
Yeah, you have food. You have food in your weird little fiddly inventory. Yeah. What format?
Just the PS3 version.
There wasn't one on PS3.
PS4, sorry.
That would have a very low Metascore.
Yeah, I'll go with the DS version of The Witcher 3.
Okay. Matt.
Do you eat in Animal Crossing?
You pick food.
You can definitely have coffee, although not in New Horizons. I'm sure I remember eating something in that.
In New Horizons?
Yeah, you can eat the fruit. You can eat the
fruit. In New Horizons?
Oh, yeah, you eat it.
Right.
So, yeah,
my answer
to
Animal Crossing New Horizons.
There you go, yeah, of course. If you want to smash rocks, you go eat an orange. or any fruit.
New Horizons. Animal Crossing New Horizons is a 90. With a user score of 5.5. Grow up, Metacritic. what was the one you said?
Witcher 3.
Witcher 3 on
PS4.
3. It's a 92. It's 4-0.
I mean,
boys, this has been close.
It's a game of luck, isn't it? Mainly, let's be honest.
I guess. Final category. A game that features pixel art as its primary art style.
Pixel art as its primary. It's map first, isn't it? I think
it's the classic PAP pixel art primary.
Pixel art,
as we call it in the biz.
I'm gonna bid Hyper Light Drifter.
I'm going for something similar. I'm going for a modern interpretation. I'm going to go for Shovel Knight.
Oh, those are good ones, boys. I think
there's probably an actual original pixel art game. To be fair, Metacritic doesn't go that far back, does it? So probably has to be a modern game of pixel art.
God, they've released Shovel Knight so many fucking times.
Oh, just the original.
Originally on. I've got it. Had a very good Street Pass mode on 3DS, Shovel Knight, if you don't know. You would pass your half of a fight to the other person who would send you their half of a fight, and then it would play out three rounds. It was really good. Shovel Knight is 90.
That is higher than I thought it would be.
On its original 3DS release.
I thought that mid-80s written all over it.
And Hyper Light Drifter. Actually, I haven't checked all the... Wait. I'm going to check all the formats. I want to make sure I've got the right one. Which format are you going for? PC, PS4, or Switch?
PC.
84.
Oh, it's
very sad.
It's a big win.
That is a big
good game,
though.
Clear the floor, didn't you, Cardi?
That's a 5-0.
I'm good at thinking of the good ones.
Never more than 6 points between you. There was no wild disgraces.
No embarrassing, apart from saying Witcher 3 was on PS3.
That's watching Messi and Ronaldo go at it.
Well, this thing, because Jesse's
and
not
I mean go at
to,
it.
I want to know how Jesse is at guessing good games. We know he's the master of guessing low Rotten Tomatoes and low Metacritic. He knows the bottom of the barrel. Does he know the cream of the crop?
I'm enjoying this run of test your knowledge games. I think there's something to it. Are we coming to the end of the endless search?
It's now called Test Your Knowledge, TYK.
TYK. Tick it.
Let's have some of your feedback. Of course, after this feedback, there will be a spoiler warning where we will talk about Loki spoilers. But for now, some feedback, which you can always send in at ign_ukfeedback@ign.com with the search games and any good narrative-based car games. That's what we're looking for this week. I sounded more and more like Alan Partridge every week that goes by. who's got the first? It's me who's got the first piece of feedback. And it's from Liam, who says, Duck Hunt, hello to you all. Long time, first time, etc. Welcome to the team, Emma. Indeed, welcome to the team, Emma. She will return. She's not been banished yet.
We had too many nice comments about about having
exactly.
A, having
so
a new
we
person
had to return just to really even out that and get some bad.
Yeah,
comments.
We really need to bring the level back down so that people yeah. know that like what we're aiming for as a podcast, which is
yeah,
mediocrity.
Exactly. Liam says, "I've just read Joe's article. Brilliant read, by the way. That's Liam, not me. By the
Thanks,
way,
mate.
I'm not saying it was a brilliant read." Although I did, you know, I don't disagree. On Konami's plan to do away with PES and create eFootball, a free-to-play live-service football game. Personally, I think this is a brilliant idea, and I hope it's one that pays off for them. FIFA, specifically Ultimate Team, has become a yearly disappointment of starting out, having a bit of fun, realising it's only been 2 weeks and everyone has God squads and giving up to not play until the next season.
Correct.
That's
exactly
normally
how, I feel.
How it goes for me, but this year, I don't know. I think it's because I've been locked inside for a year. I have just played it too much.
Boy got a God squad, didn't he?
I've got a God squad, look at me. I am the God squad man. God squad? I didn't even say squad. Squad. Got Pele though, innit?
Yeah.
I'm quite optimistic about the future of eFootball if the developers act/react dynamically as Joe wishes them to in the article.
I do.
On the other hand, the realistic prediction I have is that eFootball, terrible name.
Also
that's
true.
That's Liam again, and I do agree on that. eFootball yeah. is a terrible name. Mm-hmm. Will launch and instantly be disliked by most football game fans, creating gameplay that can run on iOS through to new-gen consoles seems massively ambitious, and I doubt they'll crack that nut first time. Only hope this doesn't kill the game completely, but through gradual updates and tweaks, they create the best football game on the market, and those initially put off come back to check it out. Keep up the good work on the podcast. We pray the football gods grant us more. It's football day. Who knows? Then, controversial ending here from Liam. You're doing so well. It says, fuck the sea.
No.
Respect the skies.
Absolutely not.
Respect the sea and the skies.
No, Liam. Don't respect the skies. It's full of billionaires and birds, and I don't like either of them.
I kind of agree completely with what Liam is saying there about PES, that in principle I think it's a good idea and one they kind of needed to do. I don't know if they needed to do, but it's a good idea for them to do, to go free to play. I do worry about the launch of it, because it seems what the initial roadmap is basically launching as a demo essentially,
yeah.
with like 9 teams and kickoff modes, and then seemingly like stuff like Master League, which people still love playing to this day, might be paid DLC, so it's not really a free-to-play game.
But,
well, it is,
yeah, well,
but you know.
I'm,
you know
so,
what I mean.
Yeah, I think, so I'm glad Liam saw my idea with that piece, which is to spell out what I think is potentially good about all of this, which is, mm-hmm. I think we have reached a point where every year people are upset by how little their game has changed, and yet still pay for it. And then, because that is no longer enough to finance a game of this kind on both sides of the FIFA, PES, or eFootball sides, they then get, you know, scraped for money by Ultimate Team and my club. And so, to me, there's something much more potentially interesting about a game in which I pay for exactly what I want. So, I do think they've made a mistake by just straight up calling it free-to-play, because what they're selling you is a platform that you can build out in the way you want. So, I will probably never touch my club, but I might buy Master League and play that and enjoy myself with that side of stuff. And I might, you know, if they did like a team-based battle pass and like Spurs came up, I might engage that month and get lots of Spurs cosmetics or whatever you could, whatever the customization options they're going to allow for that kind of thing are. But yeah. I do think the point here is that they're not making a great first impression. I am worried by the launching as a demo situation. I do believe that you can make a game that looks right for new gen and still have it work on mobile. Like, Fortnite obviously is a different scale of game, but it does work, and it works mm-hmm. seamlessly. I've never seen anyone complain about the difference was between those two things. In terms of crossplay, they've already said like that you can only players on mobile using controllers can play with people playing with controllers on anything else, so you won't have like mismatches in that way. I think there's a lot they've already thought through, and I think there's more they could think through, and I don't think they're not paying attention to what people are saying now either, because that is the crux of my piece about this, which is This is a model that now requires them to react more than they've ever had to before to keep this thing alive. Like, it's kind of high risk, high reward for PES, and I'm fine with that. And also, frankly, like, PES just hasn't been the game I want it to be for about 5 or 6 years, and I'm more happy to see them try something than just stay the same. So, and this is kind of why I'm excited about Assassin's Creed Infinity as an idea, if it does turn out to be a live service platform that adds a bunch of different Assassin's Creed stories as it goes through. You know, like, I'm fine with this thing of, like, let's shift how we release these things as opposed to what we make. I'm into it.
Yeah, I'm hopeful. I want it to do well. I want to like PES. Well, it's going to take a while for people. People will just call it PES still for a long time.
Absolutely.
You know? Exactly.
And they should.
Yeah.
One of the things they might listen to and change is let it be called PES again.
Exactly.
Stop calling it
I'm hopeful. We'll see how it actually plays, because obviously a whole new engine, switching to Unreal. That new football game online test didn't necessarily leave a good impression, but I don't think that's really close to what that game hopefully will be like when it launches.
And
but,
I'm hoping that the game launches with that song in the trailer.
Oh my god.
You are powerful.
We'll be playing that at the end of the show, don't you worry. You are powerful. We'll be playing. Have you heard the song, Matt?
No.
It's a
very odd choice.
It's a stunning piece of music.
Great.
It's almost, I got reminded of the football, was it from, I think it was from PES 2008, the football soccer greatest game of all song, which is also top tier Konami music.
There are some wild choices of the soundtracks of those games. I love it.
So good. What email have you got, Joe?
This is from Adam Brown. He says, "Hello, guys. I somewhat enjoy the podcast. I don't want to give too much praise as to upset Joe." Correct. I liked the praise in the last one. Oh, is this an onsen story again?
It's another onsen story, yes.
God, who knew we had such a cultured and nude like audience?
It's a shame. We've almost used all of them now. We can't really do an onsen special.
No, and I think that's a harder shout than even drowning.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if anything, onsens are a subset of drowning.
Mm-hmm. We will need a new special idea.
We'll get there.
For Christmas time. Yeah, no, they'll naturally
occur. They're organic,
exactly.
I went to Japan a few years ago, says Adam, and initially struggled to find an onsen that I would be allowed entry to. This is because I have various tattoos, one being a full Japanese sleeve, much to the distaste of several folk I went past on my Japan adventures. One notable occasion being at Tokyo Disney, where a Japanese man stared at my arm as he walked past with a dropped jaw, who then, at a safe distance, poked his wife in the arm and pointed at me. Or being rather hot in a Tokyo nightclub that night, so I took off my hoodie to be told very quickly by security to cover that up. Anyway, back to the onsen story. Well, that was just him complaining about tattoo reactions.
I suppose if you don't know that, yeah, Japanese culture, tattoos aren't really a thing, are they?
Yeah.
I think you're part of the Yakuza.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to the onsen story. As per the past few stories, I may start with a "did you even go to an onsen if you didn't see a ridiculously old Japanese guy" section. I indeed saw one myself, possibly with the largest, most pendulous testicles I've ever seen. Pendulous is a great
word. Good
to
know.
The onsen also had a small section with strange plugs in the water. I thought I would try it out as I wasn't sure what it was. I made my way into it. To instant regret... Sorry, yeah, I've read that badly. I made my way into it to instant regret. The best way to describe how it felt is if you've ever used the instant abs pads where it pulses on your muscles, but it's a constant feeling. Oh, so this is one of those electrical baths again. I thought that was just a one-off onsen. Turns out they're everywhere. I managed to sit down. I must have looked very uncomfortable as the Japanese man opposite me had a chuckle and pointed to a sign in Japanese, then to his heart.
What could it mean?
However, when it was time to leave, I couldn't move. After mustering as much force as I could, I was able to move my legs to drag myself away. Drag. Imagine watching a man, to your knowledge, a man of the Yakuza, getting into an electric bath and then having to drag himself out by his big tattooed arms. He'd be frightening. After this, I went outside to a waterfall bath, to which a man had a chat in broken English with me about my sleeve, where I got it, and how long I'd had it. When I asked him how long he'd had his tattoos for, he told me 30 years, so I can only assume that someone with tattoos for that long in Japan is quite likely a member or former member of the Yakuza. Here ends my stories. Respect the sea, Adam. I'd say respect the onsen for your particular stories, Adam, but thank you.
Yeah, you've
added to the rich tapestry of bathing in Japan publicly.
Did you see that in the DLC for Ghost of Tsushima, the hot springs, there's now monkeys at some of the hot springs.
Hell yeah! Let's get in with the monkeys!
If anyone's got any monkey stories or nonsense, that you'd really, really be floating our boat there. But don't make them up.
No monkey onsen liars around here. Monkey onsen sounds like a guy who would be associated, if not in
Big
the
Monkey
Yakuza.
Onsen.
Yeah. Monkey onsen sounds like the guy who's really desperate to get in it, and they keep stringing him along and making him buy pies.
Matt.
Well, I've got one here from Ben Johnson who says, "Morning, fellas. It's afternoon, but we'll allow it. I typically enjoy listening to this podcast to relax and not get flashbacks of my heinous crimes from my youth. Yet here we are."
Oh, God.
In the last episode, when Emma was complaining about hay fever, Cardi, who knows? This is in regards to they don't know how to spell your name, which I've noticed lot of people don't know how to spell your last name.
It's C-A-R-D-Y. It's not an I. It's not like Cardi B. She has... I never had this problem until she turned up doing her raps. But I can confirm you, I am just Cardi with a Y. I am not a stripper turned professional rapper.
Great. Good to know.
Yet.
So anyway, Cardi made a joke, in inverted commas, about punching a tree.
Wow.
And thus my guilt came flooding back. When I was about 10, me and my friend were sword fighting with sticks outside my house, when for some reason our attention is turned to some new bushes which our neighbour has planted next to our drive. Couldn't tell you why we did this, and I still question our decision to this day 15 years later. But we just decided to absolutely fuck up this bush. We stood either side and just whacked this bush with our sticks. What was once a tall, standing, proud bush with dark green leaves and small yellow seeds had been reduced to a thin, brown, twiggy skeleton.
You can tell how much this haunts Ben's memories because he remembers everything about this bush.
Yeah.
Once our mission was complete, there was no celebration. There was no remorse. There were no feelings at all from what we had done, which perhaps makes it all the worse and a bit meaningless. We swiftly went back to doing whatever 10-year-old kids do. But that wasn't the end of it.
I like that this is like a fugue state they went into. Like, they're having a normal 10-year-old muck about, and then suddenly some sort of demon force possessed them and just, like, blank-eyed, smashed up a bush with sticks and then just snapped back and started playing Frisbee again. Like, it's absolutely horrifying, this story.
It's like the new Netflix documentary series, The Bush Boys.
Yeah,
of two kids were haunted.
If this was American Vandal Season 3, I'd watch it in a heartbeat.
Later that evening, my neighbour came down to ask what had happened to his bush. Obviously, having no good reason for what we did, we badly lied that we were playing by it and may have clipped it a few times while we were playing. I very much doubt either my neighbour or mum believed us. There is still an empty patch by our drive where that bush once stood, serving as a constant reminder of my lawless past.
They never replaced it.
I think they may have killed it so badly that it just poisoned the earth underneath it. Nothing will ever. It's just evil under there. It's like the Necronomicon. Nothing grows. I don't know if that's something the Necronomicon does. I just bet if you buried it, nothing would grow on top. That's just me putting it out there.
Absolutely.
I just want you to know this the next time you decide to joke about punching a tree.
Well, if I'd known such repressed memories were going to surface, then I would never have done it. I do apologise.
Sorry, I've forgotten. What joke about punching a tree did you make?
I don't know when I talked about punching a tree. I must have said something about punching a tree.
Uh-oh.
I mean,
did you get in a fugue state as well?
Maybe
is there a really weird bit of last week's podcast where you're like, and next up we kill trees. Kill all the trees, you see. Just the god of anti-nature floating around and getting in people's heads.
You see, I'm not going to listen back, but yeah, I can't. Why would I have talked about... Why would I have talked about punching
trees? This demonic state. I think the demon's still in Ben. Because at the end he says, "For the love of God, respect the sea, or else you'll be my next bush on my list."
Oh my God.
Your Cornish
representative, I like my leaves. Okay. I didn't know such evil lurked in Cornwall.
Yeah.
It's such a nice place.
Yeah, I've always thought it was very, very nice, but it turns out there's some sort of horrible, like, anti-spring maypole killing bastard demon floating about getting in kids.
Exactly. Remember to write in to IGN_UKVIGN.com if you've ever been put in some sort of fugue state or possessed by a demon momentarily. Yep. We'd like to hear about that.
Is this it? Have we stumbled on it? Possession special.
Maybe that is it. Maybe.
If we get a bunch of really spooky emails back, I'm going to love it and hate it. It's going to be great.
Exactly. The fugue state special. Amazing. That's all the feedback for this week, and that's the end of the podcast this week. If you haven't watched Loki or don't care about Loki and for some reason want to listen to us talk about Loki, which you might want to do, but there you go. It won't be for ages, but we'll just talk about the last episode and what it means for the future of the MCU. So this is your last warning after this little bit of Loki music. Matt, I haven't really had the chance to talk to you at all about Loki because you were off last week when the last episode aired. What did you think of the ending?
Yeah, I liked it. Like, I think so. It's weird because I like the ending of Loki. I think when I got to the end of the show, I realized that I don't actually massively like necessarily what the show was overall. I think they basically just turned Loki into a completely different character so they could write a show about the TVA. I'd much rather Mobius have been the main character, but I understand that nobody would have watched that. Like, Loki has to be the vehicle, but I wish they'd made him actually Loki, as in, like, sort of mischievous and kind of, like, fucking things around a lot more. He was, in that last episode, was way too much of a straight man. Like, I wanted him to be the person that pulled the rug from under people, but he wasn't. Mm-hmm. But that aside, the TVA side of things, I think, is very good, and I like a lot of what it's doing. And obviously, we got, after they went through the veil, we got to meet He Who Remains, is it that they called him?
He Who Remains. Jonathan Majors.
Yes.
Excellent, I thought.
Very good performance. Very, very good. So the MCU obviously reinterprets a lot of comic book characters for its own uses, right? Like, not everybody is exactly the same. I think, because this is obviously, for anybody that doesn't know, this is a character called Kang the Conqueror from the comics, who in the comics is a 31st century descendant of Reed Richards. So the link into the kind of Fantastic Four there. Their reinterpretation of him as, like, this person that has multiple variants that have been trying to keep a multiverse kind of all-out war at bay between them by creating this kind of, like, understanding of the sacred timeline and pruning all the things that branch off to prevent a multiverse war, I think is a very, very cool idea. And Cardi, as you allude to in your reviews, and I think you were talking about it on the last podcast, has substantial kind of implications for where the MCU could go next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they kind of talked, well, that version of Kang, well, he never actually says the word Kang, I don't think, does he?
No.
But he calls himself the Conqueror and stuff like that. He's meant to be the nicest version or the nicest variant of,
so he claims.
Kang, so he claims, exactly. Can you trust him? Who knows? You can't really trust anyone in that show, which is what one aspect that I enjoyed a lot. But yeah, there will be ultimately, I'm sure, a big villain called Kang the Conqueror coming up who is an evil version of that character. Will he be big and blue like in the comics? I don't know.
Well, I mean, that statue that's in the TVA at the end, like, that might be the first hint to actual Kang the Conqueror, because the uniform that that statue is wearing is the classic Kang with the kind of neck piece and the stripe that runs down the center. But you can see there that he has very much got Major's face and hair. They've not got him, like, in the Buzz Lightyear style kind of head wrapping in purple and blue. Well, obviously we can't tell what colour, but I would assume, like, it's too much of a weird sort of thing. I think there'll be a variant that they do that has, like they did with Loki, where you get all the weirdness to it. But I think classic Jonathan Majors just in a nice suit will be who Kang is.
They've kind of made that joke before with Mysterio as well about like the silly version of the suit being something that's like made fun of.
When do you think we'll see him again next? Because we've got, I think the first time we heard about Jonathan Majors being Kang the Conqueror was the villain in Ant-Man 3, was the original casting, which is 2023, I think I'm right in saying. Loki, if you didn't see the end credits, Loki is returning for season 2, which surprised me because I didn't think we'd get a season 2 of any of these shows. So, I am like in my head, Loki season 2 comes out just before Ant-Man 3, or as Ant-Man 3 comes out and it goes alongside it. I don't know, because they can do anything. Now the timeline's all mucked up, they can kind of get away with doing anything in any order.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the interesting thing, right? Like, Kang may turn up in one of these other things, but, like, listen to how many projects there are before we get to Ant-Man and the Wasp. Yeah. Like, and how kind of wild it would be if we didn't see more of Jonathan Majors before then. Hmm. Right, so it's Black Widow, What If, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, Eternals, Spider-Man No Way Home, Ms. Marvel, Hawkeye, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, Thor Love and Thunder, Black Panther Wakanda Forever, The Marvels, The Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special, probably not in that, Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. So, like, there are so many projects before that that could feasibly have an appearance from
Kang. Do you think they'll do the... What is the famous example of it where, you know, he's kind of almost in the background of all of these projects? Like, you'll see, like, he'll just be lurking in the background. Like, you'll see a version of Jonathan Majors, like, in, like, he's basically pulling the strings for
the ghosts in Haunting of Hill House, but it's Jonathan Majors in the background.
What is the example? I've never read them, the Dark Tower books. Isn't there a character like that who's kind of lurking in... who's in every single one of them? Maybe I'm making that up. I don't know.
If you've played The Witcher 3's Hearts of Stone DLC, like Gauntero Dim hanging about.
That sort of thing. Or I suppose to an extent a bit like, because I never actually got too far in the X-Files in the end, but I do plan on catching it back up. Isn't The Smoking Man a little bit like
but
that?
But he's much more in the foreground. Like, you never know who he is, but...
It's just at the end of every three episodes, there's a shot where the camera pans around and there's a smoking man and he just goes, I'm evil. And that's basically it.
Fair enough. But yeah, I don't know if I'm going to do that sort of thing. So, like, maybe in Spider-Man or something, he'll just be there. He'll be... And no one knows who he is, obviously. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know.
I've sort of started to piece together what I think is, and obviously, you know, this is literally just me sitting here theorising, so no one takes this. I think that he's going to turn up a lot earlier than we think. I think he's going to be the driving force behind What If. I think that all of those are other timelines.
Mm. So maybe, like, the last What If is him going, and...
These are all timelines that got cut, basically.
Yeah.
Because... Everything about Marvel is never quite as... The MCU, they don't like anything to be inconsequential. Like, everything has to have something that ties in. And while I do really like the idea of What If being inconsequential, just fun for a month or so, I think they will find some way to put it in. So obviously they've got Uatu, the Watcher, is part of it. Mm. But I think this will be them looking over timelines that have been cut by the TVA on Kang's command. I think Spider-Man, we already know that Jamie Foxx's Electro's back and Alfred Molina's thingy. I'm fairly sure that's good. Even if, like, Kang is not in that film, I think there will be, like, a post-credits or something that suggests that the reason why those characters are able to be in the Prime universe is because of something Kang is doing. Mm-hmm. And then I think from then on, there'll be just things that happen in these movies that allow there to be a post-credits that's just like, and that was Kang.
Yeah.
And then
the couple I'm interested in are, we've got Shang-Chi, which, like, a lot of people theorizing that just takes place in an alternate universe because Abomination is seen at the end of the trailer, but I don't know really what, you know, it could be anything. Also, I think the one I'm most intrigued about, just as a separate film and to see where it fits in, is Eternals, because it looks so different. You've got Chloe Zhao, who just won the Oscar for Best Picture, Best Director, like, sweep the Oscars, like, that pedigree, that first trailer did a lot for me. Like, how the hell do they fit in with all of this is what I want to know.
That feels like prime timelines crossing over, maybe. You know, like, there's a universe where there are Eternals and there's a universe where there aren't. Like, that could make sense. I mean, I don't know at what point they see that as diminishing returns, because then you're essentially just going, like, you're kind of taking away the key of the Marvel Universe, which is everything feels like it could have been in one
They've
place.
They've got to be connected, haven't they? Because at the end of that trailer, doesn't Angelina Jolie say, like, who's going to lead the Avengers now? Or something?
Oh, and... yeah, but I'm not saying they're not in that world.
Oh, okay,
but,
they're not. Fair
like, but they yeah. could be in a world where there are both, and mm-hmm. then there is a world where there weren't any, and then now there is, or whatever. I don't, you know, like, I think there are ways that these things could happen in yeah. alternate universes.
I think that's what's so exciting at this point now, is we just really don't know what's going up. Whereas for... a good 8 years in the MCU, we knew it was all building up to Thanos, and we all knew it was going to end in a big war. Like, I don't know where this is going, and I'm quite excited.
My fan, like, hope theory is that, you know how the last time we spoke about Kang on the podcast, when we were just theorizing if he was in, I said that there's a comic in which he's in where he brings different members of the Avengers from different parts of time across and unites them together. If you've got Downey Jr. and you can convince him to do one more film, you've just got the book, sure, like, which you would, but let's say it's like, it's not something he's got to be contracted into, you just like, we just want you for one more. Imagine if the last Avengers film in this storyline, where it is the final confrontation with Kang, there's just a way that they bring, like, because he can time manipulate, you bring, like, Iron Man back for one last film. That would sell tickets in the freaking hundreds of millions.
Yeah. Him or Cap or both. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just, yeah, that sounds good to me. I suppose while we're talking about it, might as well just talk. We've all seen Black Widow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just talk about the end. Like, if you haven't seen Black Widow, maybe stop listening now. I'll give you 5 seconds because we're not going to talk about Loki anymore. We'll move on to Black Widow. I assume if you're into Loki, you will have watched Black Widow, but it's no guarantee. But we're going to talk about the post-credits scene of Black Widow in 5 seconds. So go away in 3, 2, 1. So, obviously, at the end of Black Widow, we get Yelena talking to Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character, who I'm guessing that was the first time we were meant to see her, not in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. What do we think that means for that character? Because I think it quite obviously... like, it surprised me a little, because it must just lead into the Hawkeye series that's coming in a few months, and
well, it feels
I don't
like,
know.
It feels like that's... a slightly murky version of Sam Jackson... at the very start of the Marvel Universe, and now she's collecting, like, corrupted potential Avengers.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've now seen her collect two people who are directly linked, but are kind of maybe more broken versions of the people that they were essentially copying or mirroring in some way.
Do we think Florence Pugh will be in that Hawkeye show then? Because she obviously shows the picture of Hawkeye saying, basically, this is your next target, in a way. Like, do we think that's kind of half what the plot of the Hawkeye show is? Like, him being hunted? I don't know.
I see that.
It's a way to give Kate Bishop agency, is something happens to him and she has to go after him. Like, I mean, maybe that's not too far away from Black Widow and Ronin and all that stuff, but I could see it happening that way for sure.
I know you're a huge Hawkeye fan, Matt, and I know you're looking forward to the series a lot.
It's less Hawkeye as a character, it's the run that it takes inspiration from. Which is, like, everybody just looks at it and, like, how can a Hawkeye thing be? Like, just read that. It is an absolutely incredible piece of work. My thing that I have with their use of Contessa at the moment is that she, when you put Nick Fury into a movie, especially, like, as early as they did, like, it is... if you know your comics, or even if you've just played some video games around it, especially at that time, Nick Fury is a good guy. Like, he runs, like, his methods aren't always squeaky clean, but he runs a distinctly good thing. Contessa is a little bit, like, Fontaine is all over the place. Like, she could be good, she could be bad. And for me at the moment, it's like, I know that for some people that's part of the fun about not knowing it is, but I think the small kind of segments that she's been in over, like, Black Widow and Falcon Winter Soldier, I don't care about her at the moment because I don't know what she stands for and I don't know what the point is. I think had Falcon Winter Soldier done a little bit better in terms of setting up to what her sort of overall goal is, I'd be more interested. At the moment, it just feels like, well, we knew these characters were kind of long-lasting anyway. Like, I just don't have any more attachment to where they're taking them. So hopefully that rolls on sooner rather than later. I don't want another 4 projects where she just turns up and points out things.
Well, I'm hoping in a way that it's kind of built into Secret Invasion and that she's actually just Talos all along. That would be quite funny to me. Mm-hmm. And it's just Nick Fury in the shadows trying to get another team together, basically. But who knows? who knows what's going to happen. More Marvel to come, though. It's good to have it back, isn't it? I know it's not really been gone too much, but it feels like we're getting back into actually starting up again properly into a new phase.
And I know it's the death of cinema and media as we know it, but I'm into it. I just like it.
Exactly. It's enjoyable. Thank you very much. I think that's all we've got time for today. Suppose we'll have that Pez music, won't we? Because it's astonishing stuff.
Imagine all those people who aren't lucky enough to be able to finish this podcast because they haven't finished Loki and don't want it spoiled, who won't get to hear this music.
You only get the Pez tree if you watched Loki and Black Widow. That's the that's the key there.
It's the powerful dessert.
Exactly. That's what I want to remind everyone on as we leave today is you are powerful.
You are.
Exactly. All of you. Goodbye.
Bye.
See ya.
To be powerful, you must know the truth.
So, guess you're all desperate to find out what eFootball can offer at a gaming level.
You are powerful. You are powerful. You are powerful.
In that case, keep an eye out for updates in the near future.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.